opinions and commentary expressed on the program you're about to hear do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or its advertisers, but it may weigh heavily on what's between your ears. It's the Krieger Files with Dave Krieger, brought to you by a network of radio stations who care about the communities they serve. Alexa, turn on the Krieger Files.
Well, this is a sad way to break into a Thursday morning edition here on the Krieger Files. And you have to wonder, based on the very first story that the news media is probably running with right now, and they're carrying all the live coverage. Every time I see mainstream media reporting on disasters like this, it reminds me of the Saturday Night Live skit about the assassination of Buckwheat. You remember that, Eddie Murphy? You know, but we, you know, he gets out of the car and he gets assassinated. Somebody shoots him. And they show this thing in slow-mo and all this. I mean, the media is not going to leave this alone. They're going to be pointing fingers at everybody, and they're going to get all the aviation experts out there to figure out what happened. And so I have spent the last 2 hours, I mean, we have been at the controls here in the studio watching everything unfold. And my lovely wife and I sat down and said a serious prayer for those 67 souls that perished. There can be no survivors, not after this. And we're talking about American Eagle Flight 5342 arriving from Wichita. Now, what we do know is that there was American figure skaters, coaches, and family members who had been at a camp in Wichita. This is a figure skating camp. It's part of the U.S. figure skating team. Russian state media also confirmed Russian figure skaters and coaches were also on board as part of the skating camp. This just isn't an American incident here. And from everything that I have heard so far, from all of the tower aircraft, I mean, it's been coming in from all over the place, and we've had a chance to analyze it. And, of course, you have to wonder, based on all of this, what in Hades a military Black Hawk UH-60 Sikorsky aircraft was doing. Here's the thing about helicopters. You realize that helicopters can hover. They have the capability of stopping their forward motion and actually being stationary. I mean, how do you think helicopters, when they take off, they take off from a stationary position and they can hover? Well, you know, you have to ask yourself, what in Hades was going on? So both of the aircraft, I mean, they collided, and from what we can ascertain, American Eagle Flight 5342 was diverted from runway 1 to runway 33 at Washington Reagan, and this happened right around 9 o'clock, a little shortly before 9 p.m. last night, Eastern Time. And we have our own aviation expert. We've managed to pull a clip from Byron Bailey. He's an aviation expert, and he's a current pilot, so, you know, he knows what's going on, and they call. This is a comment he made on Sky News about who was at fault. Go ahead and roll clip.
This was definitely the military failing to obey. Having told air traffic control they had the airliner in sight, it was up to them, their responsibility, to pass behind as they were instructed to do. And they didn't. So that, unfortunately, will be the finding. And it happened a short final into a major airport. It's very tragic. And the water temperature there, 3 degrees Celsius. Anyone that survived the actual plunge in the water would have actually died from thermal shock within a few minutes, I'm thinking.
So there you have it. Thermal shock. So you land in freezing water. And not only that, but I mean, they were 400 feet above the ground when the collision occurred. And there's video of the plane exploding. Law enforcement said that the plane was split in half. So this Army Black Hawk helicopter from Fort Belvoir, Virginia, had every means of stopping its forward movement. And the tower, which I'm not going to play the tower clip because it would just be a minute and 30 seconds of, what did he say? What did he say? So we're not going to go there. You just have to pray for those souls on board because, I mean, they didn't deserve this. This, everything that, from what we're seeing right now, American Airlines, American Eagle Jet, they did everything they were supposed to do. This is a routine landing. They were instructed to use a different runway. They did. This Black Hawk helicopter, it's like you're asking yourself, what in the hell was this Black Hawk doing there, flying there? Why didn't he just do what he was told? Well, because they were on a training mission. And according to Bailey, the training pilot is in the right seat in the front, and the training instructor is in the left seat in the front. Now, why they didn't stop? Because they could have. They could have slowed their forward motion, But according to the screens, for those of you who are interested in airplane crashes, which, you know, we're not going to embellish this because I don't want to make this turn into another assassination of Buckwheat reroll. You got to wonder why they were there, why they didn't obey tower instructions. And apparently one of the broadcast channels in the military helicopter was not turned on. So we don't know what happened, but I'm sure they're going to get to the bottom of this and we'll hear more updates as time goes on. But, there are no survivors. We already know that there's no survivors. So we just, you know, pray for those people, if you would, whoever did believe in the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, their souls and their spirits are going to, go to their final resting place with the Lord. Unfortunately, those who did not believe, and I can't say, you know, who did and who didn't, they're going to be recovered. We are also reports about bodies washing up on shore. So this is a pretty crazy time right now. For those of you in the D.C. area that happened to see it, because apparently a lot of people did, and there were a lot of airliners, apparently the pilots were caught saying, whoa, look at that. So, you know, a lot of people saw the crash. So it's kind of one of those crazy things that you have to report. And, you know, had the military been doing what they're supposed to be doing, why you would fly into a commercial approach airspace is beyond me. I mean, they normally fly at about 500 feet above the surface, and the airline was actually making its approach and had been cleared for approach. And everybody knows it because you can hear the air traffic control. But if you didn't have your broadcast frequency on in the helicopter, you wouldn't know squat from shinola. So there's a problem. Now, they'll get to the bottom of this. Don't worry. But, you know, Byron Bailey says the military's at fault here. And I can see all the ambulance chasers out there right now. And if you don't know who they are, these are attorneys that go out looking for victims' families so that they can sue for wrongful death. And they'll sue the airline and they'll sue everything. But see, they're going to rely on the NTSB report that the military was at fault. So they're going to be suing the U.S. government because everything, according to what we're hearing and what they're going to find out, everything they're hearing, the American Eagle flight did everything it was supposed to do. It followed instructions to the T, the tower, gave instructions to the military aircraft to get behind, get out of the way, basically, they said. But the aircraft just kept going and crashed right into the CRJ as it was trying to land. That's what we know. Bob Menendez, remember him, the former Democratic senator of New Jersey? He got 11 years in prison for bribery and corruption charges. Gee, I wonder how many other senators we can take and put in prison as a result of that. Trump administration, of course, as you probably have heard, has scrapped its federal grants freeze after causing great consternation. Everybody's confused. Trump has signed an executive order to prepare Guantanamo, that's Gitmo, for those of you that know it, to house illegal immigrants. He announced that move while signing the Laken and Riley Act into law. This was passed with both houses of Congress. Remember that, Joe? Say her name, Joe. You called her Lincoln Riley? Really? See, Joe's lost his marbles. But, of course, you can expect all of this to happen when you let millions of illegal immigrants, including criminals, into the country. So now we know some things. We have 30,000 beds in Gitmo, and they're there to detain the worst criminal illegal aliens threatening the American people. Some of them are so bad, we're going to send them out to Gitmo. This will double our capacity immediately, according to President Trump, and that Congress needs to provide financial support to remove record numbers of illegal aliens. So if you don't go on your own, you might end up in Gitmo, and especially if you're a criminal. Kristi Noem, of course, was on the ground yesterday, and we talked to, if you listened to yesterday's show, Michael Letts was on discussing it because he's been in touch with Tom Homan and everybody else. We apparently have some sort of tuberculosis outbreak in Kansas. Gee, I wonder why that is. Well, I mean, are all these illegal immigrants required to be vaccinated and tested for TB? I don't think so. We'll be back with more news after these words. Stay with us.
With inflation constantly chewing away at the value of paper money, perhaps it's time for Americans to bite back. Ownership of gold and silver coins provides great counterbalance to weaker paper money value. U.S. Coin Capital provides physical gold and silver coins. You can reach us directly at 1-800-878-2646, uscoincapital.com.
Need a document notarized even when one or more of the signers is out of state? What a faster way to close your real estate deals by getting your documents professionally notarized online at professionalnotaryonline.com. For more information and to book an appointment, visit professionalnotaryonline.com. or call Aaron at 941-400-8282. a trusted Krieger Files partner. Good in all 50 states. That's 941-400-8282.
From the ranks of the disenfranchised, it's the government's worst nightmare. It's the Krieger Files.
Back in the saddle, 18 minutes after the hour. We will be switching gears as of next Monday for those of you. I don't want to freak you all out, but we're switching gears to 11 a.m. Central for the show, and it's going to be carried live on satellite for those of you that are on Channel 1 that get Global Star 3, those of you with satellites that can pick it up, and it will also be streaming live on the KriegerFiles.com, so you can go there on the Internet and listen to the show live. And then, of course, we will archive the show on the Krieger Files. We have an RSS feed there where you can actually access all the programs. And, of course, we'll put program descriptions in there so you know where to find the guests. Try to make it convenient. We don't want to just dump something on there and then leave it to chance that you won't know what we're talking about. So, you know, that's important because you got to get the information out there, and we realize that. Because of the fact that we're going to be switching to video also next week, we will upload these things on Rumble. So you get to watch all these things live in the flesh, which means our guests can't sit around in their underwear to do interviews. Believe you me, a lot of them have been caught that way. Oh, yeah, we're working from home. Yeah, well, you got return to office orders now. RTO. Yeah, return to office. That means if you're a federal employee and you don't feel like coming in, yeah, but I've been sitting at home working in my skivvies and doing all these things. And if you don't do what you're told and return to office, well, you may find yourself out of a job. And rightly so. I mean, they actually have software out now, believe it or not. They have software out where they can actually look at and detect people not coming to work. Did you make it to the office? Yeah, well, we have video surveillance going on in the workplace now. You gotta love that, right? So Kansas City, Kansas apparently has had this year-long outbreak of tuberculosis, which the CDC, of course, your friends and mine, Centers for Disease Control, these people wouldn't know a case of syphilis if it bit them in the ass. And they began counting TB cases in the 1950s. How many people died? At least two. Oh, that's the worst such episode in U.S. history. Later, a nationwide outbreak of tuberculosis involving 113 patients occurred in 2021 after surgical implantation of contaminated bone allografts. So they didn't test this stuff. You wonder about MedMal. That's, see, medical malpractice and surgical malpractice kills more people. I mean, you wonder about these surgeries, right? Whether or not somebody invaded the sterile field. And so in Wyandotte County, Kansas, which is the Kansas City, Kansas, for those of you who know the area, this is on the Kansas side of Kansas City. It's because people always ask, when you say Kansas City, is that Missouri or Kansas? Because there's actually two different cities. One's across the river from the other. And Wyandotte County and Jackson County are two distinct counties. Jackson County, Missouri is on the east side of the river, and Wyandotte County, Kansas, on the west side, for those of you. I was a news reporter in Kansas City, so I know the area very well. Have traveled to and fro and wandered about covering news stories in it. So the active tuberculosis cases in Wyandotte County, 60 people, another 7 cases reported in Johnson County, which is the Rizzo County of Kansas. Johnson County is where the conservative movement is, mostly. And Johnson County is the richest county in the state, has more per capita rich people living there. And, of course, it's just exploded, you know, because of urban sprawl. The number of latent tuberculosis cases since 2024 is 79, with 77 of them in Wyandotte County and 2 in Johnson County. So since January of 24, the outbreaks killed 2 people. So the CDC's got to get all over this and scared people. Now, here's, when you look at this Mycobacterium tuberculosis, that's what this bacteria is. It's treated with antibiotics over the course of several months. And they say that a vaccine is available, but generally not recommended in the U.S. because the risk of infection is low. It's a bigger problem outside the U.S., according to the World Health Organization, of which we're no longer a member. But that does not stop the WHO from planning pandemics to attack the United States. Seriously, you got to keep your eye on these people. They're evil. Yeah. Tedros, you know him? Ghebreyesus. Yeah. Tedros. You say Ghebreyesus. Bless you. Sound like you sneezed. Yeah, this guy is no sneeze. Trust me. These people are looking for ways to contaminate the United States of America. This is not going to be a healthy situation. We have to wonder why, even though we're not members of WHO anymore, whether or not that's going to change in the future once President Trump leaves office. Because they want to get their claws into us because they want to suck more taxpayer dollars out of the United States into an organization that is out to kill as many Americans as they can. And why we have such a problem with tuberculosis in the United States would be because of what the Biden administration did. Oh, we can point a finger at them. How many millions of illegal immigrants did they let in here? A report released in 2023 by HHS, which we hope RFK Jr. is going to take over. I don't know if you saw that skank from Massachusetts, Senator Elizabeth Warren, sit there and ask RFK Jr. whether or not he's not going to take money from lawsuits and you're not going to sue, you know, Big Pharma and you're not going to sue. What do you think the Democrats have been doing the last 4 years? What do you think Fauci's been doing? How much money did Fauci take from Gilead Sciences to push Remdesivir? These people all made money off of this. I didn't hear Elizabeth Warren, Miss Cherokee herself. I don't hear her screaming bloody murder about how much money the Democrats made off of this. How many Democrats invested in Big Pharma? How much did Big Pharma actually support most of Congress and contribute to their campaign funds? See, this whole thing is just one big joke. I look at government as one big joke. You want something done wrong, let the government mess with it. See, just like, you know, Black Hawk helicopters on a training mission crash into a flight that wasn't doing anything wrong, minding its own business, and here comes a Sikorsky UH-60 Black Hawk helicopter who has the ability to stop right there in midair, crashes right into the side and splits the aircraft in two. Like I said, you want the government to get involved? Yeah. Expect things to go wrong. See, when you put your trust in government instead of God, this is where America has a problem. And when you let all these people with tuberculosis into the country, well, what do you think you're going to get? I mean, they haven't been vaccinated against anything. So it's just kind of a crazy situation. The CDC, by the way, has been ordered, since we're talking about that, to immediately stop working with the World Health Organization, according to a Trump memo. You really think anybody's going to pay attention to that? There are people already out there. And this is what blows me away ever since Victor Davis Hanson decided he was going to hook up with the Daily Signal, Heritage Foundation, Tavistock Institute. He's now part of that. Why would you hook up with somebody like that that puts out information the way they do, trying to control the narrative for the alt-right? Like I said yesterday, it's just one big seesaw, and we're in the middle, watching this thing shift from alt-left to alt-right. Alt-left had 4 years to wreck the country. Now alt-right has to go to the opposite extreme to fix it. See, because alt-left went to one extreme, got the National Education Association. Their attorneys are advising teachers to hide illegal immigrants that are in their schools. Don't let ICE in there. Protect the kids. Why? Are you running out of students to educate? What happens when one of these illegal immigrants gets hold of a firearm and comes in and shoots up the school? Then what are you going to do? What's your excuse then? See, we have a lot of real serious problems. And then how are we going to feed all these people? How are we going to give them health care? I mean, we have a farming crisis going on right now. I mean, they're literally, how many, what do we have, 106,000 birds destroyed in Arkansas alone? So that many egg layers are missing, MIA or KIA, killed in action? So we're going to be talking with Brian Reisinger. He's the author of Land Rich, Cash Poor, My Family's Hope, and the Untold History of the Disappearing American Farmer. All of this is threatening our food supply. So you wonder why the price of eggs has gone where they were. He'll be joining us after the break. Elon Musk wants to be an everything app. He's announced a deal with Visa yesterday as the first partner for its forthcoming digital wallet and payment service, much like Venmo or Zelle. X Money, it's what it's called. X Money is going to allow X users to connect their debit cards and bank accounts to send money to their friends and family and their bookies. Yeah. According to CNBC, services expected to launch in the first quarter could have more financial partners. You really trust them? You want to launch all your stuff onto X? Really? And of course, you heard that White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt, in her infinite wisdom, has said, the New Jersey drones were not the enemy. They were authorized to be flown by the FAA for research and various other reasons. Yeah, what were those? The sightings ignited fears, of course, that a hostile nation or alien civilization was surveilling U.S. military outposts in the area. Despite repeated reassurances from previous administration, nothing was amiss. we just can't seem to ignore all of what this government does, right? So Trump, by the way, has fired a bunch of labor relations board members in the shakeup of the pro-union group. We know that happened. And, of course, he's signing other executive orders combating anti-Semitism on college campuses. Yeah, we'll see how that works out. Anyway, aside from that, Brian Reisinger joins us after the break here in the Krieger Files. We'll talk about our farming crisis. Stay with us.
Taking back America, one consumer at a time. It's the Krieger Files.
And we're back from the news break here on this Thursday. Here's a little interesting scenario for you. Four global meatpacking corporations, U.S.-based Cargill and Tyson Foods and Brazilian-based JBS and National Beef Marfridge, together they buy 85% of all cattle in the U.S., and many once independent ranchers have devolved into contract labor for these companies, often selling at prices that don't cover their costs. The result has been an aggregate loss of 655,000 cattle farms since 1980, with an average of 20,000 ranches going under per year in America over the past 5 years. That is a sad statistic. And, of course, every time that this happens and you get these monopolies controlling the meat supply and egg production, now we've got H5N1. Oh, my. Another crisis situation. And, of course, 106,000 birds in Arkansas were destroyed. And, of course, that reduces supply. And when the supply goes down, the price of things like eggs and groceries go up. And for that, we have Brian Reisinger. He is the author of Land Rich, Cash Poor, My Family's Hope, and the Untold Story of the Disappearing American Farmer. It's a hidden history of an economic and cultural crisis that is threatening our very food supply, the disappearance of the American farmer. And believe it or not, Brian grew up on a family farm in Sauk County, Wisconsin, lives to tell the hidden stories of rural America. He's a columnist and consultant, working with his father from the time he could walk before entering the world of business, journalism, and public policy. And he's published everywhere. So, Brian, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
So you obviously were inspired to write this book, which has been out about 6 months now. And, of course, thanks, Kim, over there at Publius for bringing our attention to it, because Americans wouldn't know about this, especially my audience. And we have people on satellite as well as people listening on the mainstream and internet listening to the show. So we have to wonder. You don't see egg prices going down this year, right?
No, that's absolutely right. And part of the reason for it is the deep systemic issues that you're talking about. This ties all the way back to the way that we've been wiping out family farms in this country for the past century.
Yeah, and it's not just, you've obviously been to the grocery store and you've seen the price of meat. It's crazy. Red meat is crazy. I mean, you can't even go to the discount places like Sam's Club and Walmart and a piece of flank steak is $25 and you're like, holy smokes. I mean, turkeys, there's another Cargill operation. I mean, you know Cargill, what they do, and they have all these turkey farms every which way. And if you've ever seen a turkey farm in a thunderstorm, I mean, you know what happens, right, Brian? Tell everybody what happens to turkey, what happens in a turkey farm in a thunderstorm.
Well, they don't always have the sense to do what they need to do is maybe the way we ought to talk about those turkeys. They're a little different than the wild turkeys you'll run into out in the woods. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, they literally go running into the house and they crash into each other during a thunderstorm and they wipe out a bunch of them, you know, during thunderstorms. Turkeys don't, the ones that raise in captivity don't do very well, but maybe not a lot of people know that. But, you know, the thing is it's one of the things that, you know, when you're looking at this, these monopolies, and now they want to put all this other garbage, this plant-based food that's probably tainted with mRNA and God knows what else. So how do we fix a broken system?
It's such a good question. You're getting at the deep issue here. You know, the reality is that what we face is that the American economy has left behind the little guy in almost every regard. So this issue of concentrated industries, this happens all across the American economy, right? And that's the way I look at it. I look down at the systemic level. You know, the food companies, they're working to keep up with every other industry in this economy and globally. And then you got the agribusiness companies working to keep up with the food companies. You got pressure on farmers to keep up with everybody else as well. You know, they got to keep up with the ag companies and the food companies. So we've had this pressure that has had more and more farmers having to get bigger or get out now, and that's been going on for decades and decades. Now, since we started declining the number of farms in this country a century ago, we've lost 45,000 farms per year on average for the past century. What we need to do is there are a series of things that can reinject entrepreneurship into American family farming. When I look at farms like the one I grew up on, and we look at the reasons farms are wiped out, and we weave that with our personal story, I look at it, there are resilient farm families still out there that if we can reinject entrepreneurship into American agriculture, we can find a way forward. But we got to do it soon, because we're going to wipe out most family farms in this country within the next generation if we keep on the track that we've been on. And to your point, that's going to mean higher prices for consumers as well.
We basically, as far as, you know, my news sources and stuff tell me, we've been shifting because this mindset that science has, pretty soon, and I remember the joke that Randy Miller played on a bunch of people, it was on March 31st, and they were going to give $5 Bob Seger tickets for people to go, and the proceeds were going to benefit the homeless future farmers of America. And everybody bought into that, and when they got down to the theater where the concert was supposed to be, they got April Fool notices handed to them. But the thing is that these future farmers of America, the FFA and 4-H and people like that, are these types of organizations suffering right now?
Yeah, they absolutely are. You know, I mean, there are so many organizations out there that are trying to help. Here's what's going on. We've got family farms that are barely grinding out a living. It's getting harder and harder each year. Many of them aren't really grinding out a living. What they've got is they've got supplemental income from their farm, and they're working 2 to 3 jobs to make it work. You got families pulling factory shifts, working construction sites, pouring concrete, and working a farm. And so what's happening is we're going to continue to see farms slip away. And here's how that trickles throughout the entire American economy. When we have fewer and fewer farms like that, to your point originally, and we've got fewer and fewer companies involved, and we've got fewer and fewer distribution centers, like this supply chain, as it becomes more integrated, there's fewer paths for food to get from the farm gate to the dinner table. And what that means is we've got a supply chain that is in some ways a modern miracle, any kind of food you want, any part of the country, but has deep vulnerabilities. And we see that right now with bird flu. We saw that with COVID. And when that supply chain is disrupted, the price of food goes through the roof.
But the bigger problem is that people are being discouraged from farming in the first place. And of course, we have a government out there that is, and HOAs and people like that that say, oh no, you can't plant a victory garden and you can't do this. And, you know, they're banning growing food. I mean, this is almost deliberate. And we have a government that wants to interfere in everything and regulate everything. They're going after Amish farmers. And I remember a long time ago, Brian, when I was driving up through Pennsylvania Dutch country, and I saw all these Mennonite grow farms, and there were greenhouses that would stretch for acres. And Mennonites would go in, and they would grow all this food, and it would be a collective. Do you see more of that happening in the United States?
You know, I do see more of that homegrown approach, whether it's the variety you're talking about, whether it's people getting back to the land themselves or whether it's people in local farm communities and rural communities and small towns turning to their local farmer down the road for their beef or their vegetables or their food stand, whatever it is that they're doing, you see more and more of that. And you're really so right to point it out, because here's what's happening. There is a hunger for people to know where their food comes from, more so than ever before. In this country, we've really turned the page on that. Now, it's not enough demand yet to totally remake American agriculture. Farmers gotta have that market to go to. You know, we got a lot of farmers out there that want to grow new types of crops and different local, regional, and specialty foods to meet that need. We got a lot of consumers who want to see more of that food, but we're moving in that direction. We're not there yet. And so you got a lot of farms that are stuck in between. They've got to grow some traditional crops. Maybe they'll need to continue doing that on into the future, but they want to experiment. We need more people to move in the direction that we're moving in, because we can do something about this in America.
Well, then, but they're fighting companies like Monsanto that introduce GMO, genetically modified organisms, and then they're suing farmers. Oh, well, you know, the seed drifted over there, so it's trademark infringement, and now they're suing farmers and taking their land because their seeds blew over into the farmers. And, you know, this whole thing is corporatism versus the little guy. And that's the bigger picture, isn't it?
Well, yeah. And when you talk to that, combines with the point you made earlier about, you know, government. The reality is that The government is supposed to be there making sure that we've got, you know, good, fair situation for everybody and that everybody's got a, you know, an equal opportunity to try to strive and succeed. But beyond that, what the government has been doing is spending a lot of taxpayer dollars, laying down a lot of regulations, doing a lot of things that have made it harder and more costly for family farms to make it.
Sad but true. We are going to go to break, play a couple of commercials here, come back and continue our conversation with Brian Reisinger. He's the author of Land Rich, Cash Poor, My Family's Hope and the Untold Story of the Disappearing American Farmer, about our economic and cultural crisis threatening the food supply. We'll be back in a couple. Stay with us. Need a document notarized even when one or more of the signers is out of state? What a faster way to close your real estate deals by getting your documents professionally notarized online at ProfessionalNotaryOnline.com. For more information and to book an appointment, visit ProfessionalNotaryOnline.com or call Aaron at 941-400-8282. A trusted Krieger Files partner. Good in all 50 states. That's 941-400-8282.
With inflation constantly chewing away at the value of paper money, perhaps it's time for Americans to bite back. Ownership of gold and silver coins provides great counterbalance to weaker paper money value. U.S. Coin Capital provides physical gold and silver coins. You can reach us directly at 1-800-878-2646, uscoincapital.com.
Molesting your earballs one more time. It's the Krieger Files with your host, Dave Krieger.
All right, we're back at 48 after the hour. We have 12 more minutes with Brian Reisinger. You know, we could sit there and talk about this issue all day because science wants us to eat Impossible Burger. And I'm like, nope, I'm sorry. I don't trust this plant-based garbage because you don't know what's in it and people aren't reading all the stuff that they put in here, the nitrites, I mean, everything else. And we've got an obesity problem in America. I guess people are afraid to grow and eat vegetables, but I see this country headed in that direction. What do you see, Brian?
You're absolutely right. Look, I've got a rule of thumb, and maybe I've got a bias as a farm boy growing up with my dad, you know, working together from time I could walk. But the reality is, if it's grown in the ground, it's probably okay. If it's grown in a lab, you better watch out. And the challenge that we have here is we're going in the wrong direction on that in some regards. Now, on the one hand, people, as we were talking about, care more about where their food comes from than ever before. On the other hand, you got a lot of people who, you know, look, they're concerned about the environment and other things, and they want, you know, the meat that's, you know, or the non-meat products, whatever it is that's grown in a lab. Here's the thing. The thing that is actually sustainable for those people who care about the environment is the stuff that's growing on the ground, and we're doing it as naturally as we can and moving in that direction. So the people who care about where the food comes from, the people who are wary of the government, the people who care about all these things, and the people who care about, you know, our earth, we ought to be turning back toward family farming to solve a lot of these problems.
Now, you have a family farm in southern Wisconsin, according to my show notes. How many acres is it?
Yeah, you know, it's about 400 acres, which at one time was a decent-sized farm. Now it's pretty small by the standard of farms today. And we were a dairy farm for 100 years, four generations. My dad's the third generation. My sister and I are the fourth. My sister's working to take it over from my dad. And, you know, we're still farming out there. We don't milk cows anymore. We've diversified. So we raise milk cows for other dairy herds. We raise beef for consumers, and we cash crop.
So you're basically farm to table as far as your beef herd.
Yeah, from our beef herd we are. Yeah, we sell to sale barns, we sell to locals. You know, anybody who's interested in you know, in beef cattle that are raised with love. And you know, look, we're a farm that we're a little bit of a mix. You know, I mean, we were a traditional dairy farm and we grew some traditional crops to be able to feed those cattle and things like that. And so we've got some of that we do, but then we're also experimenting with new crops and we're raising beef for consumers now. So we're trying to make that transition, you know, from that traditional farm to the farm that can meet the local and specialty food markets that are beginning to emerge. These are small businesses all across America. They're trying to make some version of that transition here after a, you know, a century of farms being wiped out.
So your book, Land Rich, Cash Poor, it's the untold history of the disappearing American farmer. But I mean, what encouragement, or do you give any encouragement in this book? Or is this just a tell-all about your experience in farming? I mean, people might read this and get inspired to acquire some acreage. And not everybody can afford 400 acres right now. You know, like Will Rogers said, they don't make land anymore. I mean, once you get your hand on it and you start working it. But see, the thing is that people, they look at extravagance, they look at lifestyle, they don't look at what it's going to take to survive. This is another part of the problem of why family farms are disappearing, because we seem to, as Americans, take a lot of stuff for granted.
Yeah, that's right. You know, you're right. There's a need for hope, and I'm grateful to say we found hope. I didn't know where this was going to go, but with the book, what we wanted to do was explore the hidden areas of history for why farms are disappearing. Answer that question I've been growing up with since I was a kid, and weave that with our family story, four generations surviving from the Great Depression to today. And when we did that, we saw points in history where our country made decisions. We didn't have to make false choices or wrong turns, and saw some solutions. And the reality is that although we've lost 70% of our farms in this country, which is devastating, we've still got nearly 2 million farms left. And a lot of them are larger, supplying our food, but many of them are smaller farms. 88% of them are small farms still. And those are the farms that are, as I mentioned before, making part-time income, not full-time income. Imagine if we made it so that we could have new entrepreneurial opportunity for these farms, not only the existing small farms, but as you say, people who want to get into it. Now, families like ours benefit from the fact that my great-grandpa, you know, he worked his whole life to pay the mortgage off on that farm when he purchased it, and then each generation has purchased it from the prior generation. We're grateful for that. Those people who want to get into farming who haven't had a family that, you know, has a history of having done that, we need to make it economical for them too. So the farms that are out there, we got to find a way for them to be able to find a path forward. And the people who want to get into farming, we need to make it a brighter economic future, you know. And there's things we can do that, but we've got work to do. There's no question.
Understandably so, but see, then a lot of people go out and they go, well, I can't afford 400 acres, but I could buy 5 or 10. And if I can find some fertile ground, then I got to buy a tractor, you know, because I mean, I'm going to sit there with one of these, rear tine tillers, and I'm going to grind up the soil, and it's full of rocks, and I got to clean it all up. And then we got all this, environmental pollution going on, and a lot of people are freaking out because they think the soils have been tainted and they've got to spend all this time. And then you got people that are like dear friends of mine down here where I'm at. And they've got greenhouses because they think that it's better to even keep their poultry inside of a greenhouse because they sell eggs, and they think it's better because they're not, you know, infested with contaminants from chemtrails and all sorts of other God unforsaken, you know, whatever is, contaminating our soil. So the thing is that this is an ongoing fight for any farmer out there right now, right?
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. And it's a history that is littered with, you know, times we didn't understand how economic crises were affecting farmers on the ground. Governmental policies under both parties, established from the Republican Party as well as the Democrats over the past century, that have made this worse. And the ways that technology, which has advanced American agriculture in important ways, has also left family farms behind. So those folks that want to carry farms forward or get into farming anew, as you say correctly, there isn't enough economic opportunity in many cases to be able to do it, but we can change that. Now, we need to inject new entrepreneurship into farming. We need to have a research and development revolution. We're going to have a whole new generation of innovation that can include farms of all sizes, including those folks who are getting in with a couple acres, you know, so that they can do something that's economical for them, you know, while, you know, compared to the farms that are thousands upon thousands of acres. We've got to find a way for it to be economical. We also have to have fair markets domestically and internationally. And we need to make sure that government policy is helping ensure that and getting out of the way, not adding costs for our farmers. So if we can make those changes and we can capitalize on the fact that more people never care about where their food comes from, there can be new economic opportunity for farmers, whether it's small farmers trying to keep going or whether there is new folks trying to get in, hoping that there's a bright enough economic future to be able to justify it.
Right. Now, you're president and chief content officer of Midwestern-based Platform Communications. Is this the sort of thing that your company is doing right now as far as content, is putting out books like this to help people get a grip on what's going on with the family farm and how to get one?
Yeah, I appreciate that. But our company does work on a wide variety of issues, rural economic development and all kinds of other things. The book is my own separate venture myself. But, you know, what I found, and I'm grateful for it, is that after working with my dad, you know, as a kid, I pursued a writing career off the farm, and I'm so grateful to be able to come back around full circle. It was first in journalism, then public policy, and now in consulting. And as I say, we work on a variety of issues, including rural economic development. With that and the book and my column writing, I've been able to come back around and begin to tell the story of people like where I'm from. I'm grateful for the chance to do it. And, you know, a farm kid never has his days off, so I help out on the business side of the farm a little bit as my dad and sister plan what's next. And they throw me in a tractor on my day off. So it keeps me busy, but I'm just so grateful to be able to tell, you know, the stories of the heartland and try to find a way forward for all of us.
Well, and see, the thing is not everybody can just afford to run right out there and buy a Kubota, because you see all these, you know, Kubota yes. dealerships and John Deere dealerships and everybody, and me and my John Deere, you know, we're going to do this. And I'm like, well, before you run out, before you run out and go investing in all this equipment, understand, because I used to have one of those Super C farm alls way back when, wide front, and had the sickle bar mower and used to go put up hay on shares, did all that stuff. And I mean, you need it to feed the cattle. And I had guys, I remember when we had a problem with the drought, and I had farmers from the north, come down and buy hay from me because I had a lot of it. And, unfortunately, you know, the sad state of affairs is that, you know, if we don't get a grip on things, we're going to end up in the same boat as these northern farmers did during the drought. Now, my wife and I were talking about you being on the show, and she said, you know, I really would like to know, and maybe Brian can answer this, whether or not there is a possibility, is there like an agricultural, because people don't have time right now to go and get a four-year education in horticulture or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. Is there any kind of like agriculture extension program or anything where people can get a crash course and be given the meat and potatoes, so to speak, of how to get into this thing? Because we really need to start paying attention to this on a smaller scale.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question. There absolutely is. So yes, your local extension offices in Wisconsin, at the University of Wisconsin Extension, there's extension offices. What they are is they're extensions of the land grant universities in states all across the country. That's a great resource. Another great resource is FFA and 4-H. That's a little more geared toward young people, but you know, those are some great resources as well. You know, your local farm bureau, these are local chapters that are responsive to what's going on in their community. All those places are spots where you can reach out and have good resources to try to figure out a path forward. And to your point on drought, man, you know you've got the street cred on that when you're talking about that. One of the stories we tell in the book is my parents, when they got married, they were buying the farm from my grandparents. They started out in drought their first year of marriage. We've had farmers surviving this kind of thing for decades. They can survive it in the future as well.
There you go, folks. Brian Reisinger, thank you so much. He's the author of Land Rich, Cash Poor, My Family's Hope, and the Untold History of the Disappearing American Farmer. Available on Amazon.com and, of course, where all books are sold. It's everywhere. Been out for 6 months. Why haven't you gotten a copy of it yet? You need to. And you need to pay attention to what's going on. You need to be looking into the future, looking at acquiring acreage and moving forward and growing your own food first, because your government is not going to be there to help you out. We already know that. I mean, they can't even control air traffic, for crying out loud. And military, I mean, like I said, you let the government involved, everything's going to you-know-what in a handbasket. Anyway, Brian, thank you so much. In the meantime, we'll be back with our Friday edition. God bless you, and God bless the United States of America.
Thank you.